You're listening to the Laugh Factory Podcast Network. For more shows, visit the podcast page at laughfactory.com.
It's the After Laugh, After Laugh. Welcome to the After Laugh, After Laugh, After Laugh. After Laugh, man. Go ahead, pull up a chair.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the After Laugh. I'm here with Saurabh Lupta.
Gupta.
Gupta, the standard. I mean, Gupta is a very traditional Indian name, right?
Correct. You might have heard about Sanjay Gupta, the guy who says, like, weed is cool.
He says weed is cool?
Yeah, like, he's a doctor on CNN.
Of course I know who he is. Yeah.
Yes, he says, like, you know, weed is, like, he talks about weed all the time.
Now, do you smoke weed?
Sometimes, yes.
Now, are you from a very traditional Indian family?
Yes, but, you know, things are changing because...
Because you are now embarking on an acting career.
Correct.
Which I think is very... So, full disclosure, and don't tell anyone.
Sure.
He's Airbnb my apartment right now. And Saurabh is staying here in beautiful West Hollywood next to Laugh Factory. Nice yard, right?
Yes, very beautiful.
Apartment, not so much. Nice yard. And good location.
I agree.
You're just talking about how the gas in LA is like almost what $5.50 or something?
Like almost double of Texas, like where I like drove here from. It's like literally the twice the price.
And it's one of the few walkable places in LA in general, where you can walk to movie theater, you can walk to the gym, you can walk to all these overpriced stores and whatever. Which is, you know, and Trader Joe's, which is nice.
Which is nice.
You can walk to Whole Foods.
Whole Foods and, you know, Whole Foods is a nice buffet.
Because, the gas here is obviously absurd. If you're not from California, you don't know. But, I mean, some places over $6. It's really fucking nuts.
Over $6?
And they just raised the tax. I don't know if people know this, but they just raised the taxes, the percent sales tax to 10.25. It was like 9.25. Now they raised it like a full percent.
Okay.
So, and they just kind of sneak that in there, just do it. And the people who know are the people who run the stores.
Okay.
And on top of it, they have the whole shrinkflation thing going on.
Yeah.
Where they're putting smaller and smaller packages on all the fucking foods. but I get a discount at Whole Foods because I shoplift. Okay. No, I'm kidding. Sometimes. Anyway, so I think it's very fascinating when people, and I don't want to ask your age, but I'm guessing you could be in your 20s, but maybe 30s.
I mean, men don't really have an age, so
men
just evolve, so if you want to put a number, you can say 26.
Okay, so you were in the corporate world in New York.
Yes, first I was in New York, then in Houston.
In Houston, okay. And because I went to Princeton,
okay,
which people in podcasts know, and I was an aerospace engineer, because I had a dad who was an engineer. Very Republican, very conservative, wanted me, he had three boys, wanted them all to be engineers, none of them became engineers. But, so that was what I went to school for.
Okay.
And it's not like I was some genius who was like, you know what, man, I just want to express myself. I wasn't that good at it, to be honest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In schools like Princeton, and there are a lot of schools like this, getting in is hard, staying in is pretty fucking easy.
Okay.
You just have to not be a complete and utter fuck up on drugs. And you'll
Girls are beautiful.
What's that?
Girls are beautiful.
Yeah, exactly.
There
so
you go. That's your incentive.
Anyway, so I basically graduated and it was fine, and then I went to acting school. So that was my journey. Now that was later than some people, but I think that's a kind of standard journey for a lot of people. Is they kind of like hit 20, 21, they kind of go, okay. Now once you get past 25, it's a different shift in your life, right? So you were already on a course, I'm assuming, in life. What was that like?
So, again, I come from a traditional family, as you said. Like, my dad wanted me to be an engineer, so I went to an engineering college.
What school?
It was back in India. So,
oh, okay.
But I worked really hard for that. It's like top 10 colleges in India.
So, did you learn English from a baby age?
Yeah, baby age, pretty much, because the medium of instruction in India and doing business is English.
Yeah.
So I was fortunate there to starting English from a very small age.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went to engineering college, like I cracked this exam and, you know, everybody's happy. I'm happy too, but when I got there, it sucked. Like, it was so boring. I was like...
Just being in school. And it was a four-year program?
Four-year program, and everybody was a nerd. I was too, but I said, no, this is not... I cannot
do
this.
I'm a nerd, but I can get laid.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Yeah.
So, my thing was like, I cannot do this for the rest of my life. Like,
yeah.
The careers that come out of this, I just cannot do that for the rest of my life. So, back in college, I knew that I have to do something different.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't know what. And the family's financial situation was not the very best. So I could not do this right out of the college. I could not drop off.
Yeah. Because they're not going to be able to foot the bill.
Foot the bill.
Like all these white kids in America have.
Yeah.
I think people forget, particularly out in LA, a lot of these comics are out there working and blah, blah, blah. And they're doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not really making money to live. I'm probably like, motherfucker, where's your trust fund, asshole? Because... You're doing gigs at the Laugh Factory Comedy Store like two or three times a week. Like, that's not paying for your rent, motherfucker.
Correct.
Anyway, so, and by the way, quick caveat. Same thing with when I was in college. I went and I interviewed at NASA, and there's a campus in New Jersey. And so you just think space. For some reason, you just think when you're in school, like, aerospace and space is cool. And I don't know what the idea was. Maybe you just think that everyone's kind of, like, weird and quirky and fun like Einstein. And, you know, Einstein... crushed puss too. I don't know if people know that, but he was a beast. Anyway, so, but then you get to the interview place and you're just like, wow, it's all nerds with big Coke bottle glasses who are overweight and are like pre-diabetic for sure. And I went to the interview and for NASA, I mean, it's NASA, right?
NASA.
And I was talking to the guy who was working, on a zero gravity toothpaste. And he'd been working on it for 5 years. And I was like,
zero gravity toothpaste?
What the fuck? And he's in little cubicle, like little cubicles.
Okay.
Just like in Office, the TV show.
Yeah.
But you're NASA, but you're in a cubicle. And I'm like, oh, it's not like always a guy landing a rover on Mars with a mohawk. That's, you know.
That's what they show in movies. Like,
yeah, NASA's exactly.
Cool and stuff. And you do these crazy missions and, you know, you save the planet.
No, you're in a cubicle.
You're in a cubicle.
With spreadsheets.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, anyway, that was same thing. I kind of... So, you had that realization, but what did you do about it?
So, I said, yeah, I have to... I actually had nobody to talk about this because in my family, like, everybody is the similar background. Like, they are not even engineers. They're, like, basically nerds and doing the regular professions, like the stereotypes.
Doctors.
Like, my elder cousins are, like, doctors. So, they were... For them, it is, like, the shit. Like,
yeah.
And everybody worships them. Like, my elder brother is a doctor. My grandma is like, oh, this is so cool. My grandson is a doctor.
And are they happy?
I mean, I guess so. Like, for them, it is. Yeah, it is.
But you ever sit down with them and have a drink and be like,
yeah, because we don't have that culture, like, in India.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, are you really happy?
Happiness isn't something that you think about as
correct.
A goal.
Yeah. Correct. So this is a very interesting question. So I never asked him or other people who pretend to be or it seem like happy. So
and
I was like,
by the way, there's something kind of, I hate to say, there's something kind of good about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just kind of do your thing. Like my dad, he was in Navy. He was a vet, but he was civilian. And he had three, he got married, had three kids. And I don't think he ever stopped and pondered. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It like wasn't a life of like pondering. He just went to work.
Mm-hmm.
He did the thing. And then he went home and he had his crazy wife and his kids running around. And then he just did it. It was a thing. And he did it for 35 years. And then when it was time to retire, he retired. And I only think it's recently that for some reason, maybe because we're entering the age of Aquarius or whatever it is, that people are kind of really putting an emphasis on what that means to live a fully expressed life or follow a path of happiness.
Correct.
Because even my dad, I asked him about it. He goes, that's just what you did. You had the,
right.
You got married and had the kids.
Right.
And you got a mortgage. What do you mean?
You get a mortgage and you pay it off and you know, at the end you just...
And same thing in India, right?
Correct.
But India probably even more so because the country doesn't have the same weird, rugged American individualism of like, you can be anything you want to be and all that bullshit
exactly.
That people are piping
exactly.
In
exactly. So in India, it was pretty much two paths. Either you can be an engineer or a doctor.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a stereotype, but it is like stereotypes emanate from some... kind of reality,
of course.
Truth. So it is true, like, you know, the smart guys, you see Sanjay Gupta and, you know, the CEOs running Microsoft, Google's, these guys were, you know, their fathers were simple guys who did very simple jobs, but these guys worked hard, went to a very nice engineering college. Out of 500,000 people, they ranked in the top 100. Can you imagine that? Top 100 out of 500,000.
It's fucking nuts. Yeah,
it's crazy. So that's why these people are running the corporations. So I was on that similar path, but I was obviously not that smart, like Sundar Pichai. So that was the path for me. So when I got in, I said, you know, these people, the people I was surrounded with, they were very smart.
Yeah,
like they were guys who would read a textbook once and it's done.
Yeah.
I was more of a hardworking guy. Like, I have to read it 5 times before me to get it. But I was creative. Like, when I was a kid, I used to have, like, nice drawing books, scrapbooks, and, you know, all that stuff. So I knew that there is something of that somewhere in me.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody liked it when I was a kid. So maybe I should explore it someday. No, not today, because, you know, I need to earn some money, pay for the bills, take care of the family.
So you graduated school for your program.
Correct.
And they have headhunters that poach you for a job type of thing.
Yeah.
And what was your job? Was it an engineering job?
It was an engineering job. And
what type of engineering?
Like, again, writing code, like any nerd you can imagine.
Computer engineering.
Computer engineering.
Okay, yeah.
Like writing code and, you know.
C++. I was terrible at languages.
I was terrible too, because I realized, like, after a certain time, like, this is it. Like, I was good at it first. I wrote some crazy programs, then I was done. And I said, you know what? I luckily landed this job. Like, they said, you know what? We'll take him. No, it's okay.
Yeah. You know, what would that job look like when you'd go there? You'd get up there, you'd put on your suit.
No, not a suit initially. Like, just wear a shirt, like a regular office shirt, and a trouser.
And slacks, yeah.
And, you know.
And you have a cubicle?
Yes, I have a cubicle, the dreaded cubicle, and a monitor, and, you know, you basically.
Wait, mantra?
No, a monitor, like a computer monitor, like a big one.
Yeah.
And pretty much you grow old in front of it.
And you just, what you do, you just have an assignment for the day that's given to you?
Like, yeah, assignment for the week, couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a manager who is.
Was it stressful or was it just kind of mundane?
Both.
Yeah.
Because, again, people want things done faster and cheaper.
Yeah.
Pretty much, thanks to capitalism. So, yeah, I mean, it was like that, and it was stressful and it was mundane. I don't mind the stress because every job is demanding. Like,
of course.
Just like being a NASA engineer, respect those guys, like being a doctor, a serviceman. Mm-hmm. Everything has stress. It's part of the fun. It's what keeps it interesting.
We didn't come on planet Earth to not be stressed.
Yeah. Like, I'm not that guy who's like, I'm just going to chill at the beach and everything is we will be fine. This energy is flowing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that kind of guy.
Yeah.
So it was more mundane, I could see that, like, I'm not this. Because when I saw guys who were, like, 50, 55, about to retire, and it was like, when I'm 55, I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
When I'm 65, I don't want to be that guy. And
but
it was,
they,
like,
also, they also probably had a wife and kids and a family they were raising. So what became important in their life was not the job. What was important was their family and
stability.
Their children. Yeah.
Giving their family stability. And I respect them, like, because people just kind of work towards circumstances.
Yeah.
Like, I guess when they were in my age, this was the coolest thing. Like, you have a job. Like, something that is paying you regularly when the employment is not readily available.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I bet at that time he went to back his home, and it was like being the NASA engineer to his family or to his, you know, town or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I realized that this is not for me, at least. But I kept doing it. Like, a year or two later, I got into management, thankfully, because I sucked at writing code, but I was kind of good with
people
kind of maintaining relationships and being, you know, keeping just people okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, things are moving. So they promoted me, and I was a manager. That's when I started wearing a suit. And I was still, you know, this is not...
Pay bump. Now, do you have a girlfriend at the time? Are you looking towards getting married? Anything like that?
I had a girlfriend. Family was always like, you know, okay, now you're have a promotion. Let's, you know...
Now you got to get the girl, because if you want to get the next step, you got to be married.
Married and all that stuff. The traditional stuff, like the traditional way. So, but again, it was not like the arranged marriage kind of situation.
That was still going on though, right?
Yeah, it is. So it's like 50-50% now.
It's funny because there's so many people, again, you talk about stereotypes. There are a lot of stereotypes. I'll give you an example. I posted on Patton, you know, Patton Oswalt. He's a comic.
Yeah, okay.
He posted... a tweet or on Instagram, and someone texted him, "Come to Huntsville, Alabama, Daddy. I can't wait to see you." And then right after, "Oops, sorry, wrong person." And he posted that. I think we know who that was intended for. Anyway, for a different comic, let's say. Anyway, at the top of the photo was his phone
number,
phone battery, and it was 100%.
Okay,
and it was also charging.
Okay.
Right? So me just trying to be a clout chaser and get some love from Patton, because he's a hero of mine. I want him to pay attention to me on social media. I say, "Patton, your phone's already 100% charged and you still have it plugged in. That's incredible wasteful. That's incredibly wasteful.
Okay.
Think of all the kids and the poor kids in China starving for a charge.
Yeah.
On a phone that they made.
Yeah.
So that was the joke I made.
Okay.
By the way, not a terrible joke.
It's gonna be fine.
But I was like, okay, he's charging a phone that's already 100% charged. That's wasteful. Think of all the starving kids in China who need a charge.
Correct.
And they made the phone too.
Correct.
That's all I said. Now, by the way, kids in China are making iPhones. That's just what's happening.
You're not inventing it.
I'm 100% right.
Okay.
They're toddlers.
Yeah, I mean, if they're you're saying it, probably it's true.
So, like, but my point is, I got that it got removed
from Twitter,
from Instagram.
Okay,
as offensive or whatever. I'm like, but that's what it is. So even if you say something like about arranged marriage to Indian people, as arranged marriage, people will kind of go, "Oh my God, that's offensive." But it's still a thing that happens in India a lot. And by the way, they're probably more successful than most. Non-arranged marriage, from what
you're right. You're right. It is. I mean, you just have to. It depends on how you say it and who you say it. Like, if you talk as a friend, everybody's cool.
Yeah.
But if you're like come up with the energy, like, or come with like kind of emotion that, oh, you guys are doing bad.
Oh yeah.
Then everybody would be like, whoa, like, chill it.
I think there's something really beautiful about an arranged marriage, as long as. The only problem with that is then what are the divorce options? Because if you have an arranged marriage that ends up being horrible, are you then stuck for the rest of your life?
No. So it's that's a very good point that you raised. So actually, a couple of my friends, they got into arranged marriage and it didn't last.
Yeah.
And now the society is opening up and they're like, okay, wait, like, hey, if it's not working, you can go for divorce. And it's pretty like... very simple. And two of my friends were females. So, I mean, there is always a taboo. Like, you know, girls have less say into things. They have less power.
Yeah.
But that's not true. Like, I mean, they said, like, hey, if you cannot live with that guy, so we cannot, we'll help you. And, you know, they got a divorce and both of them are remarried. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay. So you're on the path. You're in management now. Which is a little bit better.
Yeah.
But you still have this gnawing sensation inside that, like, this can't be it.
Yeah.
This isn't everything. This isn't what my life is, right?
Right.
So then what do you do about that?
So I just kind of... It was interesting when the COVID thing was starting.
Uh-huh.
So I said, you know, I have to do this. Like, you know, go out, at least try. Because for all these
acting.
Years...
Acting. So you knew you knew it was acting all along.
Yeah. Because
you
like
said
something
creative.
Expressive, like, you know...
But what, of all the expressive things, painting, dancing, music, what was acting? Was acting something that had always been back of your head, or what?
So I'll tell you, I experimented with some mixing some music. I DJed a bit. Mm-hmm. So the funny thing is, in March... I DJed at a rooftop. It's called Z Rooftop in Long Island City. And it's beautiful Manhattan, like, you know, skyline, everything is beautiful. And next thing you know, next month, the entire world shuts down. I was like, was it that bad? Like, you guys hunker down and, like, nobody wants to listen to my music. So I said, okay, I want to dabble with some music, and I want to try acting as well. So here I am.
So you said, I want to try acting. How'd you? So you found a school. How did you find the school?
So I was looking for something that would not that would be after work. So, like, you know, after 5 p.m., something like that.
So you're still working right now?
Yeah.
Remotely as a...
As a manager.
As a manager.
Yeah.
Okay, so back up for a second, because I thought you were a manager in India.
No, no, manager here.
But, okay, so you... But you... You went to school in India.
Correct.
And then you moved straight to America?
No, I worked for some time. Uh-huh. And some company offered me. So then I got a visa, work visa. I got here and I'm doing
and,
the similar
and you moved
job.
To New York.
Correct.
And you're a manager in New York. Okay.
Correct.
So when COVID happened, you could be remote.
Yeah.
So, but if you want to learn acting, why not just stay in New York? There's plenty of acting schools there.
Yeah, because when the COVID started, and the New York was in a very bad spot.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, and it, New York is depressing in the winters, like for, especially for me.
At least LA, you can be outside.
Yeah. So I said, you know, let's go out and let's, you know, kind of see how things are. So I traveled a bit. I went to Denver. I went to Miami.
Were you driving around in your car?
Yeah, I was driving around. You know, again, that's the...
So where are your parents during this whole time? You go to the States. They're still in India.
Correct.
What city in India?
New Delhi.
New Delhi, okay. Which is a big city. Is it the biggest?
It's a big city.
Okay. So they're still there. You moved to America. They're okay with you going to America.
Yeah.
They're not like, you're going to Satan's butthole. Okay. Which you are in, let's be honest. But you come to America, they're okay with it. You get to go back and forth and see them sometimes. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're making good money in this job, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah. It's all right.
My Airbnb isn't the cheapest. but I want to cut you a deal. Anyway, so you drive around and they're cool with all that shit. There's no weird paternal...
Okay. They're like, you're a responsible guy, you're an adult, so...
Yeah, you were a good kid, you weren't a fuck up like I was, okay. So you drive around, and while you're driving around, are you looking for something? Is there something in your brain that you're like, man, I want to... Because I'm a big traveler, right?
Okay.
Like, when COVID started for me, I went on the road. My friend, who's like, his family's like a billionaire, they live in Ohio, and he wanted to transport his dog to his dad's place in Ohio, and I said, I'll drive your dog.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Give me some fucking money, dude. I'll drive your dog. So I drove his dog around, and I started on this journey for the first time. I started doing psychedelics.
Okay.
And I think most people, because, you know, I'm in my 40s, so most people, when they start psychedelics, at my age, it's because you're kind of going, okay, what's it all about, man? Because I've seen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to the mountaintop. I've been in the fucking pits. Like, what's going on? Like, can I peel back the curtain somehow, either in my own mind or in the actual universe, whatever the fuck it is, who knows the difference? So that's what the journey was for me. And I think that traveling in the road kind of is almost an extension of that idea of trying to, like, there's an idea that the more literal space in front of you, the more space your mind has to actually expand. Right?
Okay.
In spiritual, that's why every spiritual retreat, it's not in a fucking, like, little room. It's all
correct.
Out in the ocean, open space. So, were you conscious of that? Was that something? Was it in any way spiritual journey for you? It was just fun, just checking out America type of thing.
It was more fun because, like, I lived in major cities like New York City, and
you hadn't been around the rest of America.
Not much.
Like, and by the way, beautiful,
beautiful, very
people,
beautiful.
People for some reason people don't. I don't know. Maybe they don't know that or whatever. Maybe
this is beautiful. Like, people are super nice. Like, all those places
Trump
you...
supporters.
Like, you think that, you know...
Country, yeah. They're nice.
Yeah. So, it's funny thing is, like, when the election results were announced, the day, I was driving from Colorado, and I just crossed over into Texas. And... Literally, I'm not kidding. It was I saw the election, like the countdown, like the counting of votes with my Airbnb host in Denver. And then extended my trip for 2 days. I said, you know what, if if Trump wins, then I should take a different course, etc. I extended my stay for 2 days. My Airbnb host was super nice. She said, okay. And, you know, I stayed there. And then they said, you know, there is a delay. Then I said, you know, fuck it. Let's just go.
Yeah.
And just travel. And it's surprisingly when I crossed over into Texas and they said, you know, Trump lost. And I was like, all right, so shall I just turn around, go back to Colorado?
Are they going to have their guns out shooting everyone down? <Yeah. laughs>
So, but yeah, everything was fine. So thankful, knock on wood. And, you know, people are, I've lived in Texas for a bit. People are like just like any other, you know, any other country, any other people.
Yeah,
so they're like,
they
do their stuff.
I really take umbrage to, and I was never this guy. I mean, look, I went to fucking Princeton. There was a part of me that yearned to be a snob.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Manhattan.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My first girlfriend was an agent at a big agency. I would go to like cool Zach Posen parties and Tao and all the fucking hot clubs and bullshit, Webster Hall. And I wanted to kind of have that cool, edgy, snobby lifestyle in a way. Mm-hmm. And I definitely got indoctrinated into this term that I think now is like really like coastal elitism, where you really think, okay, Manhattan is the city. There's no other real the city.
It's the city. When you say
Manhattan's
the city.
The only the city.
Yeah, because I'm
going to
the city.
What, you're going to Manhattan?
Yeah.
No, we're in California. Well, then you got to go to Manhattan. You can't go anything else in the city.
That is the only city.
So, and I was for sure a little bit of a part of that. And it's easy. It's easy to get caught up in this idea that everything left and liberal is right because it's the party of compassion. It's a party of caring about people. It's a party of the thinkers and the intelligent people and the people who are trying to broaden the horizons of their own mind and the minds of everyone else. So I get that. And I was completely a part of that. But then when you travel a lot and you start doing a lot of comedy shows and you're in Reno and you see these truckers with the fucking bellies out and da 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 da, it's so easy to dismiss these people.
Right.
And then you talk to them, you get to know them, and they're fucking kind and
they're
generous
super cool
and love
people.
Their family.
Yeah.
And are okay with the fact that you're a liberal and you're half a fag or whatever the fuck they think you are. But they're okay with it.
They're
you know
okay
I mean?
With it. Like, they're not as depicted as
no.
bad as, like,
and
in the media.
And I think people still, it's amazing to me how many people, in to this day, in L.A. and New York, who have this idea that there's not two sides. There's the right side and there's the shitty fucking wrong side.
Okay.
And it's really kind of, you know, I had a situation recently where I went to a cocktail party in the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Okay.
It was a wine and cheese party.
Very cool.
With this guy who's a former lawyer and some other, like a voice actor and another actor and some whatever. And I had to get all my vaccinations for shows because I was working on a TV show called City on a Hill and another show, this guy, Moammer. And I'd already had COVID.
Okay.
I had high antibodies. I was like, so I kind of held off and getting vaccinated. I'm like, I don't need it, right?
Makes sense.
I got the first shot and I was like, he's like, yeah, the first shot after you already had COVID should be enough. But then SAG demands you get two. I was like, fine, of course I'm going to do it. I'm not going to like, what? How dare you? Second shot, I felt worse. It didn't feel right with my body. I knew that I didn't
need
it.
Which one did
you
get?
Pfizer.
Oh,
I knew I didn't need it. You know what I mean? I know
me,
my
me
body.
Too. Like, I just got the J&J for the heck of it. Like, because it's just one shot. But yeah, I didn't feel like it.
Yeah. The second shot, I was like, I know I don't need a second shot, but I have to work. And I got it. And it fucked me up. But like, I was fatigued for a while. Anyway, I bring that up because when I won this wine and cheese party, I just had my second shot in order to work on Sitting on a Hill. And he goes, are you vaccinated? I go, yeah, I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to get. And like literally people just, their heads snapped at me like, what do you mean you didn't want? I was like, I just didn't feel like it. Like I'd had COVID.
Yeah.
I'm healthy.
Yeah.
I'm not obese. It's obese people that are going to the hospital for the most part.
Okay.
And old people. It's just factually. And for some reason, that's
like
a third
like,
rail you can't talk about.
If you have a comorbidity, like, then you, people are, that's most chances.
So this one guy just right away, just like, ugh. He was just like, fuck you. Sipping this $100 bottle of wine. And he goes, you know what the Gen Z, you know what they're calling unvaccinated people? Now I'm waiting for a joke. I'm a comic. So I'm like, what's the joke? There could be a funny joke there.
There could be.
The Gen Zs are calling the unvaccinated people. And I'm like, some kind of smiling, what? He goes, plague rats.
Are you serious?
I go, what? Plague rats. And I go, plague rats. Like, he thought that was funny.
I'm a
comedy connoisseur, so I'm like, at the very least, whatever you want to say, if you're like, hey, isn't that fucked up that these kids are calling grown-ass men plague rats? That's a little extreme, huh?
Yeah.
And he says, is it? And I say, because I can't stop, I say, are you cool with calling black people plague rats? Because statistically, black people have more vaccine hesitancy than white people. And now I think it's close to, there's parity with it, but particularly at the time, there's more.
And then he's quiet.
And he goes, that's a myth that black people aren't getting the vaccine. Meanwhile, all my black friends were like, fuck that, I'm not getting this shit. So I go, nah, man. And here we are in this Upper West Side bubble.
Yeah.
Wine and cheese.
Like upscale. Wealthy.
It's the exact stereotype.
Correct.
Making fun of calling them plague rats. And I'm going, yeah, you want to call them. So you're fine calling black people that and Mexican people that, because Mexican, the Latino community in general, is very vaccine hesitant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just be consistent, Mr. Woke, because if you're going to call everyone plague rats and you think that's funny, then just know that in that group of people, you're including disenfranchised minorities as well. Are you cool with saying that? Comment now.
Okay.
Should I have said that at a wine and cheese cocktail party? That was probably not. I didn't say that as contentious as I'm saying it now.
Yeah, but like, when somebody calls you a plague rat, you know, then anybody would be riled up.
And then he goes, and then the conversation kind of kept going, and he kept, you know, and I brought up things like, I know women who have a lot of vaccine hesitancy because they want to have a baby.
Makes sense.
And there are studies proving that it does fuck with your period. Now, does it fuck with your fertility? We don't know, but
if it fucks with your
period, then it does something.
Something.
So I understand women who are like, I'm not getting the fucking vaccine because I want to have a baby. If you don't understand that, you're a fucking dipshit. I'm not saying that they're right, these women, but I'm saying you got to be like, nah, okay, I get it. Right? If you're a 22-year-old basketball player in the NBA and you're ripped and you're shredded, or you're Aaron Rodgers, you know, an elite athlete, and all you know is there's a foreign side, you're like, no, I'm elite. I'm fit. I don't need this shit. Like, at least get it. At least go like, Aaron Rodgers will probably be fine. He had already had COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's only to say that it's just a very weird thing when you go across a country and there's such a weird polarity that exists.
Yeah, I agree. Like, even I'm living in Texas, like, nobody wears masks.
Yeah.
Like, nowhere. Like, literally, until you are going to hospital or a doctor's office, the masks are nowhere. And everybody's just fine, like, doing okay.
Yeah.
So when I got here,
a bunch of people walk around with walkers and oxygen tanks, like, dying.
Yeah. Nobody. So when I get to LA, like, there is this, like, I'm in my acting class. It's funny, it's the first day, everybody's wearing a mask. 20 people, everybody's wearing a mask. So if I see this guy in a grocery store or a girl in a grocery store, I would just go right by.
Yeah.
I would not, like, hey, how are you? I don't see my friend's face because everybody's masked up. So that's like a little too much. And I was not wearing a mask. And there was one guy who was like, can you please wear a mask? I was like, dude.
That is fucking insane. I mean, at the very, okay, I was thinking about this today because I flew here. Not to brag, but 10 years ago, or I'll even go further back. Let's say 15 years ago. Let's say 2006, even, whatever. What 2010, let's say.
Okay.
Or 2000. When everyone had their cell phones, social media was kind of big. So, you know, that was the year, around the year, where everyone was just on their phone 100% of the time. Right? Because Facebook was 2007, 2008. Instagram, 2000. Anyway, Twitter, 2009. Anyway. You're on your phone as the plane is going down the tarmac about to take off and you're like texting, like, hey.
Texting.
Like, I would do that and people would look at me like, you're going to wreck the plane. Put your like, they would literally look at me like, you're going to kill us all. Now, meanwhile, I've spoken to many pilots.
Okay.
And I've flown on private planes. And every single pilot to a person's like, it's a completely different frequency. Has no, there's zero interference with the plane right away.
Communication.
At all.
It doesn't, so why do they make us do it? Like,
exactly. So my point is, when you'd see people lose their minds at someone who had their phone out when the plane was either in the air or on the runway. I mean, literally like, motherfucker, put your phone away. It's the same thing now with masks. If you're on your, I was on a plane and I had my mask. It was like under my like one nostril.
Okay.
Because the truth is, I'm old. I don't have the best oxygen intake anymore. I have stuffy nose. I've broken it a bunch of times.
Yeah.
I need to breathe, motherfucker. So sometimes I just, let me just relax.
Like breathe like normal human being.
And by the way, I have cilia in my nostrils that block particles. Like, why is my nose, shouldn't my nose be a better filter than the mask? It probably is anyway. So, and this woman saw me. And I was watching a movie and had headphones on, and she was like, "Put your mask." I did something, and then it happened again. And the guy like turned like he got in my face, put your mask on like that.
Oh wow!
And I said something like, I said, because again I have issues, obviously. I said, "Fucking relax, asshole."
Okay.
And then she was like, oh, how fucking dare you say, blah, 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 blah. I was like, shut up, stupid. Say you're stupid or something like that. Bling, bing, bing, bing. Called. She moved her seat because, you know.
For just like a mask and because, somebody like.
And I was like,
refusing.
It just was down a little bit, you know. So, but it's the same thing with the cell phones and taking off.
It's like overreaction.
People are being told that there's a problem, although any serious scientist or anyone who knows anything about what's going on knows that it doesn't fucking matter. Particularly, we're all, half these people wearing no one's wearing a KN95. Mm-hmm. No one wearing a filtered, expensive top line mask. They're all wearing like shitty little fucking surgical masks or cloth masks or neck gaiters that aren't designed to block a virus.
Yeah.
So, but people get indoctrinated into this idea that. And then it goes away. Like now, if you're on your plane, you can be on your phone literally like the second you get in until you land, and no one's going to bat an eyelash.
Yeah.
But they've never announced, hey, by the way, it's bullshit. It doesn't have, although there's not a whole thing with 5G. Apparently 5G does, but who the fuck knows? Anyway.
Like anyways.
So.
That was a good thread.
Yes. So you're in. Here you are in LA. Everyone's wearing their mask. Did the teacher have his mask on too?
Yes, like, and he was like, he wears glasses, so when he's breathing, he's like cloudy. So
everything about his face, but when you do the scenes, you take the masks off, obviously.
So what they do is like, you know, it's been only two classes, so they give us they have given us these transparent masks. So it's pretty much like
a face shield?
Like a transparent mask, not a shield.
Oh, it's a regular mask, but you can see through it.
Yeah.
And you do your scenes in that?
Yeah, so we'll start doing scenes in the upcoming class. Up till now, it was more of a lecture and etc. We'll start doing it. But when we do it, we'll wear the transparent mask. But
oh, my God.
It's not a mask. It's just like a plastic, what do you call it? Like something plastic. It does not filter anything. And if I show it to you, you'll say,
how do you breathe? Is it mesh? How do you breathe through it?
There's no breathe through. It's just like, think about it. It's like a face shield, a little face shield on your face like this.
Uh-huh.
But it is completely open. You don't breathe through it. You just breathe the normal air. It is just for the kicks, for the mask connoisseurs. Like, everybody should be masked. So it's like giving them the false illusion.
Now, do you think if the teacher said, hey, guys, is your teacher fat?
A little, yes.
Of course he is. He's an acting teacher in LA, which means he didn't fucking make it. So he's probably fat and miserable. Anyway, do I sound bitter? Anyway, so.
Maybe.
Some of them are, by the way, I'm not saying that. Maybe he's a great teacher, because there are a lot of really, really great teachers. I'm sure I have a lot more credits than him. But the point is that, so he's, you know, obviously, but if he just came in and said, guys, fuck, you're doing this thing, take it off.
Yeah.
It's about human beings interacting. This is not how we interact.
Yeah.
Take off your fucking mask. Unless the scene is written, every scene is written from a new show where people wear masks.
The COVID world scene, then it would be different.
You, Tennessee Williams, you wear a mask. Fuck that. That is a travesty.
Yeah.
I would lose, I would fucking, oh my God, I would lose my mind. I would like, quit, I would quit.
If I do the same thing that if I do it on a plane, they would make a huge deal out of it. Like, this guy, minority, look at these people. Like, they're bringing this disease into the country.
Oh, that's right, because Delta came from India.
Yeah. No, Delta came from India, but no, it is just, you have to make the so many excuses for everything. So they can say, oh, the virus came from the China and this. So I said, you know what, I don't want to get into this.
Of course not. Of course not. No, of course you got to do it. And by the way, learning how to act, it shouldn't matter where you wear the mask or not.
Yeah.
It probably is actually good in a way because it's like swimming with, like, I don't know, like little floaties on. It trains
correct.
You.
Correct.
So, which, but hopefully at some point you take the fucking masks off. Eventually, hey, this is the third week we're on the scene. Can we? It's a makeout scene. Do you want us to make out with the fucking masks on?
Actually, it's funny thing is the scene that I'm doing with my partner, it is like love sequence, but we are not doing the love sequence. We are doing the sequence after where the heroine regrets that. So I was
what's
like,
it from?
It's called Boy's Life.
Oh, okay, of course.
Have you read that?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
It's really
so it's I'm playing the guy right after he has sex with with the high school crush. So
you guys in bed smoking a cigarette through the hole in your mask. Yeah, okay, got it.
Yeah, so it is a funny
so
experience.
They pair you with this woman to do the scene. Did you guys rehearse separately? Do you like meet
she
up?
She wants and, to just do it more separately.
Yeah,
but I said like this is more of us doing together.
Yeah,
so I want more of us time, but again I don't want to push her for, you know, because she has her own schedule. So I said like, hey, this is my availability. If you can make whatever time, that
yeah.
would be.
And of course, everyone acting class has affairs. My last serious girlfriend, whatever, was like, I met in an acting class.
Mm-hmm.
It's just great because you get this faux intimacy and you get to look at someone in the eyes and say things. But that was different. That was a time long gone past. Anyway, so you've had two classes now.
Correct.
And these are your first acting classes ever?
Ever, ever, ever.
How does it feel?
It's pretty cool. I mean, it's a totally different world. And, you know, just getting in tune with the emotions. Like, I never realized that if we say things differently with different emotions, it is totally different experience. I'm enjoying
yeah.
it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, there's... I was telling you before we started this that one of the things I do is I do a lot of audition coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason I do audition coaching is because... I've been acting for a long time, you
okay.
know. I got a minor in acting when I was in college, and then I went to graduate school at NYU for acting, and my first show was a Broadway show, and then I just stayed in New York, and I just acted. Stupid. Dumb. Why did I do that? When you know, really, at the end of the day, because you come to LA, you get on a CW show, you get on Green Arrow or whatever the fuck it is, and then you can go, hey, I want to do Broadway. And they're like, oh, you're on Green Arrow? Here's a Broadway part. But if you're just in New York just doing theater, like the last play I did was a play about Rudolf Nureyev, who was a gay Russian ballet dancer dying of AIDS.
Okay.
And I was like really into it. I lost weight. I grew my hair out. I dyed it. I was like, I did the Russian accent, everything. Two-person play, hour and a half. I had to do ballet, and I did my best. But I really worked my ass off on this fucking part.
Okay.
Right? And I killed it. And they wanted to move it to Manhattan Theater Club, which is a big theater place in New York. They're off-Broadway space, right?
Okay.
It's a cheap show, two people, one act, very easy to produce, off-Broadway.
Off-Broadway.
I've had several credits on Broadway. My other guy has had credits on Broadway. And they come, they look, they love it. They love it. And they're like, we love it. Okay, what's happening? Well, we want to do it with Billy Crudup. I know Billy Crudup, he just got nominated for an Emmy for The Morning Show.
Okay.
He's like a star. This is off Broadway. This isn't Broadway.
Okay.
You need a star to do an off-Broadway fucking show. Is that really where we're at? That you have to
end of civilization.
You have to make sure that your off-Broadway theater actors are Emmy winners too. Is that really what the fuck is going on right now?
Okay.
Particularly when you create the role and you're the first person to do the role and you invent it, put your heart and soul into it, and you get great reviews. All the reviews are through the roof. They're like, "We love it. We love it. Well done. Well done. We're going to try to get Billy Crudup in your role." And I'm like, I get that if it's like a trust me, whenever I go in for a movie, and this movie that I'm up for, they're going to David Cross, who's an actor, and Chris Elliott and Schitt's Creek, and they're like, I'm like, I get it. You get something like that, of course you get like that. Why would you fucking hire me? But off Broadway, motherfuckers. So anyway, the point is, that's why I spent my time in New York, just toiling away doing theater. So what I found is that particularly comics would come out to LA or from New York or whatever, and they would start getting attention because of their comedy. They'd get a comedy special, they'd get on Colbert or Late Show, whatever it is. And all of a sudden agents go, wow, you're a comic. Now let's get you into a movie.
Okay.
Which is weird because comics are like, I've never been an actor, I've just been a comic.
Correct.
So now I have to say other people's shit
which I don't enjoy.
So what happens is their big agency, their William Morris or CAA or wherever the fuck, tells them, I'm going to set you up with Ivana Chubbuck or whoever that other bitch is, whatever. They go, and it's $250 an hour for an hour of audition coaching. But she's amazing. She coached Halle Berry to get an Oscar. This guy coached Haley Steinfeld to get an Oscar for True Grit. This, you know, but they have their person that they got an Oscar. So now they can overcharge everyone off of a bus from Wichita who's dying to be a fucking actor and make their mark.
$250 an hour.
Wow. You know what? You're new. $200 an hour. And by the way, I've worked with these people.
Okay.
I've had audition sessions with these people, and they're garbage. I don't mean they're garbage in the sense that they don't know anything.
Okay.
They know something. They know a little bit, but they don't have some magic elixir in a teeny bottle where like, oh, this is the key.
And if you drink it, then you'll be like,
yeah, you're still you. You still just have to say things into a fucking camera and sound believable.
Okay.
And no one's going to spend it's an hour. Is someone going to break you apart and make you say
an
that?
An hour is nothing.
Yeah. So I started going like, wait a second. My friend Emma Willman, great comic, green actor. She's paying $200 because she's making money doing comedy for these acting coaches out now to audition for a sitcom for CBS or something. And all these other guys were doing that. I was like, guys, use me. I'll charge you fucking $50 an hour.
Okay.
Maybe $60. If you're having a great, great week, day, get money, $80. You know what I mean? But like, that should be the maximum. I'm not a surgeon.
Correct.
I should not be charging some $300 an hour to say, hey, maybe make this choice.
Okay.
It's ridiculous.
I agree with you. It's
a scam out here in LA with these acting teachers. I'm telling you, this Ivana Chubbuck bitch, fuck her. So what? Halle Berry already had a career, and you coached her. What? So what?
Okay.
You didn't make Halle Berry Halle Berry. Halle Berry is Halle Berry because she's Halle Berry. First of all, because she's hot. If she was ugly, Halle Berry wouldn't be winning Oscars. Anyway, the point is, I think there's this weird cult of personality that gets built up around acting teachers and audition coaches out here, like Leslie Kahn's another one, where they go, oh, you have to go to this person. But it's just the same thing with the mask. It's like groupthink. It's not based in reality.
So basically, it's just like they're running this facade.
Hey, look, I'm not saying that Ivana Chubbuck is a con artist or that Leslie Kahn is a con artist.
But it's just they're not worth the money.
I'm saying that they found out that they were able to establish with proper marketing and cult of personality and the right person, the right actor vouching for them, mentioning them when they won their Oscar or whatever the fuck it is. Oh, I can make a lot of fucking money. And by the way, I don't even mind that. But when you're some fuck off the bus from Oklahoma City,
yeah,
and this is your big dream, and you a great looking kid, and some manager goes, "You need to work with Vibe Chombeck," and you're like, "Here's my rent money,
else I'll be homeless
to work on these two pilots, Ivana Chombeck, because you're going to be the one who holds the key to me book." No, they don't have the key. They're not going to help you book the part. Sorry, they're not. They will help you. A good acting coach will improve your audition 20% maximum.
Okay,
they'll help you. Hey, you're taking your. You got to hop on the cues here. You got to be faster here. You're missing an operative word. I'm not hearing what you're saying. What's your intention here? What do you want from this person?
Okay.
What does this line mean? That's really what it is. But there's nothing magical there. I've worked with like 7 or 10 of the. I worked with this one guy. He was the one who coached Hallie Stanfield from True Grit. And I went to this. I had to go to like a lobby. Oh, because it was a callback for Entourage when Entourage was really hot.
Okay.
And it was recurring roles. Oh, this is going to be a big deal if I get this. I might as well, this is named Michael something. I might as well work with the best guy. And the guy's like, "We got to make sure that you don't have any perfumes or deodorants that you're wearing." He's very sensitive. I'm like, "Oh, like I'm getting pre-screened in the lobby. I've already prepaid $250.
And okay. You're telling me in the lobby, not you cannot.
I mean, maybe there was like a thing, a waiver beforehand. And he goes, "Also, like, you know, until you're working with him, like, no eye contact." I was like, "What the fuck are we dealing with?" Like, he, you know, is this guy fucking, he's autistic? What's happening? And then, he, you know, "Okay, are you ready? Do you need some water?" And, okay, fine. And then you go into this little guest house and he's sitting there with a camera or whatever. Maybe it wasn't tape. Maybe it was just like coaching. And I worked with him and he gave me a choice that I thought was pretty good. He gave me a different choice that was pretty good. And he confirmed another choice I made was good.
Okay.
And I left going, this is what people are paying
$250
money for? And I understand, granted, I've had a lot of experience acting, you know, so maybe for him, he's like, "Well, this guy already knows what he's doing. I'm just going to help fine tune him." But if that's the case, people have no experience. What are you going to do in an hour with that money?
True.
So are you going to have an opportunity to audition at all?
Not
yet. End of this? I mean, at the end of class, do they have a showcase?
Yes. There will be like a friends and family night.
Uh-huh.
So we would be presenting the scene.
Yeah. And maybe by there, you don't have to wear the mask.
Like, which one is my Airbnb guy?
God, that is so fucking... I don't know why. I'm not even mad about it, man. I just think it's hilarious.
It is. It is funny, to be honest. Like, people just... if you want to be like this... be so much about science, then read the science. Like, why are you wearing a mask in the open, like,
yeah,
or under the open sky?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
To the very least, but
yeah,
it is just,
also, if you want to look, if it's about science, the science is that you're just fucking meat and bones, you're going to die, no one cares. So there's the science. The science is that we're living in a simulation.
Okay?
that's the science.
So yeah, but I want to practice more. Like, maybe, you know, when I'm rehearsing.
Do you want to do a scene right now? Do you have a scene?
Yes. Like, I can do a scene like the one I'm rehearsing. We can do that one, or like any scene should be fine.
Yeah, we can do it. You want to do it right now?
Okay. Like, do you know The Boy's Life?
I mean, if you email me the thing, I can read it with you.
Yeah.
It's a romantic scene?
Yeah, it's after the romantic scene.
Okay, so. I'm going to pause this, and we're going to do that, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to be free coaching, brother.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that.
Right. First, for the After Laugh podcast, we're going to do an acting scene, and I'm going to read from A Boy's Life. By the way,
Trust.
I'm not like so. Oh, this is from Trust.
This is Trust. I'm sorry, I said Boy's Life.
What's Trust? Oh, what's Trust again? What's that?
This is the name of the play. Is Trust?
Was there a movie about it? What's it about? I forget.
It's about basically like there is this guy who sells his company. Mm-hmm. And he's like a millionaire, but he still has a thing about his high school crush. He finds him, the girl, I'm sorry, he finds her,
uh-huh.
And she's a dominatrix. And
I love it.
Yeah.
So it's a comedy.
Kind of. Like, she's this is more of a drama.
Oh, okay.
So she's into him, but she's like kind of playing mind games with him.
So they just lights up on the diner. They sit opposite each other. They drink their coffee. Have they hooked up yet?
They just literally hooked up.
And then they went to diner afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
So here we go. So you're Harry, I'm Prudence. I'm not going to do a woman's voice. I'm just going to read it.
Yeah, that's fine. All right. So shall we start?
Yeah, let's start.
Lights up. All right. I'm sorry I seduced you.
I'm sorry I bit you.
That's okay.
What are you going to tell your wife about the bite mark?
My wife? I think I'm going to tell her I got bit by a pit bull. Yeah, I'm going to tell her I got bit by somebody's pit bull, got off the leash, and bit me on the back. And really, the idea of somebody finding me appealing enough to sleep with me, that would never occur to her.
Why wouldn't someone find you appealing? You're rich. You smell good.
I do? Thanks.
You smell like a coconut.
Coconut soap?
No. So, okay, you're saying, oh, because you, it's basically because I want a coconut soap.
Yeah, so.
You smell like a coconut.
Coconut soap? And you say.
Okay, but it's not a question.
Yeah.
I say you smell like a coconut.
And I have to say.
By way of explanation, you're saying.
Like a coconut soap?
No, like, because I would use coconut soap.
Okay. Oh, you.
So you basically, oh, it's basically you're saying, oh, I use coconut soap. Ah.
Right? Okay.
That's the meaning of that.
So, you say ah,
I
right?
go, ah, I get it. That's why you smell like coconut, because you use coconut soap.
Yeah.
Okay. So, ah.
Ah. Wow. Prudence Teller. Who would have thought that an article in the Village Voice would lead to this?
To what?
To this. Have you ever been to Hawaii? I have a very beautiful place on the north shore of Kauai.
Harry, this is the last time we're going to see each other.
What?
Harry, you're married. Although I might dispute your description of as happily married.
It's okay. I'll get a divorce.
I think you're a little giddy right now because you just had sex for the first time in months. But the fact remains, you're married and I have a boyfriend.
And he seems like a really nice guy.
He has some attractive qualities.
Name them.
You don't want me to name them. And beyond that, I am a dominatrix.
So?
So, I'm a dominatrix.
I don't care what you do for a living.
You would.
You said you wanted to quit.
I won't quit.
Why? Like, why are you why are you into this? Were you, like, abused?
Were you?
Not physically. Maybe a couple of times. Actually, it's kind of funny. Snot running down my face, card table across my head. He was a chemistry teacher. Screaming. Always screaming. Stressing about money. He would suck the rage out of the room. Everybody else looking at him, nothing left for anybody else. Sometimes I look at his ashes and I can hear them yelling. You didn't mean that this is the last time we're going to see each other?
What more do we have to say to each other, Harry? I mean, we already made passionate love. It's all downhill from here.
Was it bad?
What?
Was it bad?
What?
Having sex with me?
It was weird.
Like weird, like creepy weird?
No, it was good.
It was good. Good. I feel like going back to my wife and telling her it's over between us.
Don't do that. Please don't, Harry. Just take a breath. Take a long, a month-long breath.
I forgot my line.
I think I'm in love with you.
I think I'm in love with you.
What?
I know no. I sound irrational. I'm in love with you. I'm in love with you.
Harry, you're not in love with me.
I want to have kids with you.
Okay, great. Let's stop there.
Okay.
So that's it. By the way, impressive that you got off book. Now let me ask you a question. Why did you get off book so quickly? Are you supposed to be off book for it?
What do you mean by off book? Like,
off book means you've memorized it.
Yeah, the teacher asked us to memorize the lines.
How do you memorize lines?
Like, the first line, it's me, mine, or my partners.
Uh-huh.
After that, it's pretty much I'm bouncing off her. Like, what would be my natural response to if you say something?
Okay,
like, I have a very bad memory, so I was like, you smell like soap. coconut, then coconut soap means obviously. So I try to do. That's why you'll see like my lines are not 100% there. Like they're like
That's actually. Well, that's well done because that's the way you're supposed to memorize your lines from a place of connection and what you want and how you feel. So that's good. You know, it's weird when people memorize it too much.
What are your thoughts about memorizing every word? Like,
it doesn't. I mean, I will say this for sure, and you can quote me on this shit. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
So I did a film called Before the Sun Explodes on Amazon Prime right now. Buy it for $2.99, maybe $3.99. I forget. Anyway,
HD.
I was cast as a lead, and we were looking for someone opposite me. We brought in all these different people. One of the people that we brought in was my friend Tiffany Haddish.
Okay,
do you know Tiffany Haddish?
I have.
She's the black comedian who's all like, they ready, uh-huh. She was in Girls Trip. She's very funny, pretty.
Yeah, I've heard that name. Like, maybe I've seen her.
She's kind of massively famous now. At the time, she wasn't. She came in to the room for the audition just like, oh, shit, man. My day was fucked up. This fucking bus, okay, let's go. And she, her line, I mean, there was a semblance of what the fuck the script was. Enough to get through the scene, enough for me to kind of react and get through the scene. But line-wise, it was like 30% there.
Okay.
They offered her the role in the room.
Wow.
Which is very rare, by the way. Mm-hmm. That you do an audition, they go, can you work next month? Usually you wait, but I've been offered as part of the room like twice maybe. So, and I was a little bit like, what the fuck?
And you're you're waiting to be auditioned.
Yeah, no, I'm reading with her because I'm already cast.
You're cast,
so they're looking for a chemistry read.
Okay,
so they bring her in to chemistry read with me.
Got you.
And she is all over the fucking map with the lines. They're not even like remote. And she's improvising and doing this shit. And it's funny and charming because she's funny and charming. But she's way off base with the lines. And the two writers who wrote the fucking screenplay are like, "Can you work next month?"
Okay.
So my point is this. It doesn't fucking matter. Now, every once in a while, you're going to have a writer who's, like, if you have Aaron Sorkin, for example. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who is just like, or David Mamet. God forbid you work with that lunatic. But, like, if you have someone whose language is so precise and so specific, there's almost no wiggle room to fuck around with, then yeah, of course, like you're going for an Aaron Sorkin play, you fucking memorize it and you do it quick and you walk and talk. But in general, 99% of the time, all writers want is to look good. And if you mess around a little bit here and there, if it's not word perfect, it's fine. As long as you're organically there. Now, obviously, it's a little bit different with plays. People tend to be a little bit more precious about playwrights.
Okay.
And I think I mentioned this in a podcast before, like one of the reasons I kind of got into comedy because I got fired from a play. And I got fired from a play because my character was this, like, Arkansas hayseed. So I was doing, like, an Arkansas accent, and I was being this guy. I was, like, cool. He was, like, a fun guy, man. Just, like, love shit. And just, like, but he would, like, fuck his cow. Hey, man, I used to fuck my cow named Bessie. Let me tell you something. We get behind this thing. Great role, right? Getting the best reviews I ever had in my life. So the play is about gays in the military, and there's a guy from the Navy coming and interviewing me. And he goes, are you, I forget what it is, but he starts questioning like about homosexuality, right? Because it's about don't ask, don't tell in the military. He goes, is your bunkmate gay? And the line is written, goes, he never copped my knob. He never copped my knob. Phonetically, it's a little tough. For that thick accent, he never copped my knob. It's the PT. He never copped my knob. It's a weird. He never copped my knob. And then he goes, have you ever slept with a member of the Communist Party, the same sex, or a small animal? This is later. I talked about fucking a cow, and I go, define small. And that's how the scene would end. It would get like a laugh. And I would always go, like, okay, it would get a big laugh. I go, but man, I'm telling you, I was like, there's something about that line, he never copped my knob, that doesn't work. I was word perfect for this fucking play.
Okay.
Word perfect. Chad Lowe is a TV actor, was one of the leads. He's a TV actor, so he wasn't Word Perfect at all. He was all over the fucking map. I was Word Perfect. I'm a theater guy. I know the fucking rules for everything's divinely shat from the asshole of Krishna, and you catch the droppings. Yes, thank you for this language. But I was like, man, cop mine up doesn't fuck. It's something, not my, it doesn't work for my character. With my accent, my deep hayseed hick accent, he never copped my knob. It did, like you cop a feel. Copped, it just, so I was like, I tried it for weeks. I finally go to the playwright. I go, David, can I just change one word?
One word.
One word.
Wow. And he lost it.
He goes, Bill, the play works. It won awards in the West End in London. I go, I know. One word. Let me try one. Bill, please. I go, please. I kept begging him. Let me change one word. Okay, fine. You can try tonight. Cool. So he goes, I'll ask you a question. He goes, is your bunkmate gay? And I go, he never gobbled my knob. Gobbled is an easier word. It works with my character because my character is all about fucking and eating and blah, blah, blah. It's a funny word. G&B is funny. He never gobbled my knob. And got a huge laugh. And he goes, have you ever been to same sex, communist party, small animal? I go, define small. And it like brought the house down. I was like, I fucking knew it. If I got a better, bigger laugh previous, if people didn't get tripped up on the he never copped my knob thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then if he never gobbled my knob, which slowed it down, made it easier to understand.
Easier to understand.
A huge laugh, and it like got a massive applause break. I'm like, fuck yes, I knew it. I knew it. I knew all along. The next day, the playwright calls me. Bill, you got to put the line back. David, you heard the reaction. It worked. Bill, you're a good actor. You can make it work either way. Why not just let it be the way I did it?
The way it is. Like, it's organic.
His ego was way too... And by the way, it's part of the reason why the motherfucker has never done another thing. I mean, he made the movie version of this. It was called Burning Blue. And I think four people saw it, and it's fucking garbage. But then you work with someone like Tommy Kail, who directed Hamilton, and Tommy Kail is just like, what do you got? What do you think? How do you think? You like this? The smartest people you work with, the smartest playwrights, directors, actors, whatever, are all going to be like, what do you think? Options? And they'll at least look at your options. So in the play world, you should be as close as possible. In the real world, if you're auditioning for like TV or movie, I'm not saying it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. Okay. Be close, but you don't have to be word perfect. No one fucking cares. They just want to know if you're the right guy for
right
the part.
Guy for it, because it's all about... Like, the communication is 90% is body language, and, like, it is signals
I would
rather
say
than words.
Most of the parts I've ever gotten, I went off reservation for the audition. I just started adding shit and improvising and something.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm the improvising guy, but I feel my teacher doesn't like it.
Of course not. Particularly for plays. They get fucking weird about it.
That's fine. So, I can... So, like, as a general piece of advice, who are the people... let's just say.
So the only thing I would say about this for you, because, you know, this is new, you're exploring it, you're trying to figure out the lines, like, to be in a place where you're married, I mean, this is what I read when I see this.
Okay.
A guy who's kind of button up, nerdy guy, whatever, does the thing like we're talking about, married, maybe has a kid. Maybe they don't have a kid.
He doesn't have a kid.
Okay, they don't have a kid. But they're married. Maybe that's the next step is having a kid. And maybe there's a part of them that's always felt like, I guess this is just what you do. You know, I don't know. Like, sometimes people don't know that they're unhappy until they're given a taste of happiness, right?
Yes.
So this may be too far. But my guess would be something happened sexually that he never experienced. Now, what that usually means... So maybe he'd had this weird latent... masochism thing to be beaten or whipped or whatever the fuck it was that he didn't know. For example, I mean, this is a little deep cuts, but like there's certain guys who like their asshole is like shut down. It's like a coal mine from the 30s. Like there's a fucking board across it. And then you app it up and you like play with a prostate and they're like, what the fuck? Like, woo. Like, their whole life changes because they're like, Jesus Christ, like, I can be a straight man and experience ass play and it feels that whatever. Like, there's a story of a guy who went to get his prostate checked. This is a true story. Prostate check in Florida. and the doctor did the thing with the prostate. You're too young for this. It'll happen one day. And the guy came. He's like, ugh. And then he went back the next week and killed the doctor because he was so ashamed of it. So my point is...
Is it a real story?
It's a real story. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So the point is, there's something about... Something happened here that opened him. Maybe she pegged him with a fucking dildo. Maybe she fucking beat
him. She was his high school crush.
She was his high school... But now she's... But beyond that, she unlocked... Like, he has whip marks on his back. So he... So imagine if you're a guy who's actually... Like, I don't like pain. I'm not into that shit.
Nope.
People, like... Me neither. Women have, like, bit my nipples. I'm like, stop. But imagine if you're someone who is into that. Whatever your thing is. Like Louis C.K. says, everyone has a thing.
Yeah, everybody has a
thing. I don't know what your thing is. Think about what your thing is, right? Imagine not having ever had that thing, and all of a sudden someone shows up and goes, here's your thing.
Okay.
And they find your thing. And you're like, oh my God, this is the only person who's ever found my thing. So, first of all, you're vulnerable as fuck because you're like, you're almost like a babe in their arms. Like, this person discovered the reason I'm alive. Really? Yeah. You know what I mean?
I feel it's something like this with him because there is no sex in his marriage.
So it's not just he had sex. It was also like a new way of having sex.
Correct. And also a high school crush. He has, mm-hmm. Later in the play, he says, like, I used to draw your nose and the patterns on my notebooks. So he's a little creepy as well. But, you know, he is like very, like, I would say, intense emotions.
Yes, for sure.
For this girl.
Now, beyond that, let's say, so I'm sorry I seduced you. She says, I'm sorry I bit you. And you say, that's okay, right? Are you mad that she bit you?
No.
No, it turned you the fuck on, right?
Yeah.
And you never knew that you were that guy.
Correct.
So that's okay is almost like there's a little like smile
Smart.
Behind that. Like, that's okay. Like, I liked it. And maybe you're a little embarrassed by it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've never, I wouldn't be into a dominatrix when women would try to do that shit. It just doesn't turn me on. But like... But, you know, people who like to be bound and gagged, ass in the air, and stepped on with high heels, like, imagine that's your thing. And some woman discovers it, and you're like, oh, my God, this is the woman I'm going to spend the rest of my life with.
Yeah.
She is the one woman who licked my asshole, whatever the fuck it is. Anyway. So, about the mark. So, this is fun for you. You're getting hit a pit ball. Someone's pit ball. You know, it's like it... Like, this is almost, you're bemused by the whole idea of this amazing pain pleasure threshold you just figured out.
So that I'm making this shit up as,
of course,
as a speak.
Yeah, yeah. He got, and you think it's maybe like, okay, I'm going to tell her that like there's a pit bull.
Pit bull.
It bit me on the back. And so it's, and on the back is kind of like funny because it bit me on the back. Like, it didn't bit your arm or your leg. It bit you on the back, like in the middle of your fucking back. She raised her eyebrows, like, what? And then, you know, then it's like, my marriage is miserable. She doesn't even look at my body. She doesn't even fucking notice, honestly. It's like bullshit. And there are all these dot, dot, dots. And dot, dot, dots always mean, they mean a pause. You're thinking of something, yeah. And then you're finding it. And so the idea that you would date, that someone would find you appealing enough to sleep with you, that would never occur to you. That's a very vulnerable thing to say. Like, you're basically saying, like, my wife thinks she doesn't, like, the reason you're not having sex is because my wife deems me unfuckable.
Yeah. Pretty much.
So the idea that someone would want to fuck me, like, it would never, like I'm dating someone and all she does is think I fuck other people. It's the opposite.
Okay.
Right? So your wife just couldn't even imagine. You're like, I'm going out with Becky. You're like, oh, have fun. You're not jealous at all?
Yeah.
She couldn't imagine that.
So I should say, like, more of a serious tone or, like,
well, I mean,
something like
very... By
the way,
don't worry about the tone, right? Just think about what you're imparting to her, what you're saying, right?
Right, right.
What you're saying is, like... Okay, on the back, so you're doing pit bull. She kind of raised her eyes, like, it doesn't matter. Like, she basically saying, like, she doesn't look at me. It's like, you're trying to explain how little in trouble you're going to be from this.
Yeah.
I could have things on my back. It doesn't matter. She doesn't even fucking
look
at me.
Care.
The idea that, like, I would be with someone else is just like, it wouldn't even cross her mind. You know what I mean? Like, and that's kind of vulnerable, but you're telling her that because you want her to know that, like, how unencumbered you are
yeah.
to this marriage, right?
Yeah.
So always think about, like, what you're doing to the other person in the scene. It's never about what you're feeling. what you're feeling is a byproduct of what you're doing, right?
Okay. Okay.
And
I
that's like one of the basic tenets of acting. When I started acting school, I was like, but what am I feeling? It's like, fuck, what are you doing?
Acting
what
is
doing. What are you trying to do? You're trying to, you're in this space with this person. You just got pegged. You had the biggest orgasm of your fucking life. You know what I mean? That you never thought you could experience.
Correct.
With your high school sweetheart, and she's beautiful, and your wife is like, no, you basically, this is the beginning of you saying, like, my wife is dead to me already. She doesn't look at me. It doesn't matter. She wouldn't even, the idea that she thought I would fuck someone never crossed my mind. And then he goes, why wouldn't I find you appealing? You're rich. You smell good. Again, do you ever get compliments from your wife? I do. Do you ever think that you smell good? That means not cologne. Your natural. She likes the smell of your natural body odor. I've had women tell me that. I like it the way you. You're, really?
Natural body
odor. It's interesting. Like, yeah. You like the way my armpits smell without you? I do. So it's kind of like, cool. Thanks. Yeah. Like, you smell like a coconut. So then it's like, well, I use coconut soap, you know, basically. Coconut soap.
Coconut soap.
That's why you smell coconut. Yes. You don't naturally smell like coconut. It's because I have coconut.
Now it makes sense because when I rehearse with my partner, even though she's a woman, I cannot, like, you know, in my brain, I cannot connect the dots. Now I can, like, it's a coconut soap, like, because...
She says you smell like coconut, and like, oh, that's not my natural... It's because I use coconut soap.
Yeah, it's coconut
And then
soap.
She goes, ah, got it.
And, yeah, she never, like, the way you're breaking it down, like, I try to tell her, like, okay, let's get into the scene, like, feel it. So she doesn't feel it, and she's like pretty much just reading the lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then you go. Then you go. And so then this is like one of the first big beat change. And you have a line here, so I'm assuming this is what it means. So there's a beat change of like maybe there's a shift in your body. You're like, wow, here we, Prudence Teller, and that was like a name you wrote in your book, Prudence Teller, like on the vertically on the liner of your notebook, your spiral notebook, Prudence Teller. You know what I mean? Probably in different. Whatever, cursive and shit. Who would have thought, you know, and maybe you would say, who would have thought I would have ended up fucking, but you don't want to say that. Who would have thought? So whenever there's a dot, 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 think of what that sentence was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have thought I would have fucked Prudence Teller? Who would have thought, you don't want to say that. That's a little bit too much. So you say, when I saw the ad in the Village, who would have thought, when I saw the ad in the Village Voice, so you respond to a dominatrix ad. So this is something you would be curious about, but you didn't know about. Almost like your experience with acting. Like, I'm curious what's going to be like.
What's going to be?
When I saw that in the Village Voice. So I guess the question you have to ask yourself, when you saw that, did you know it was her when you saw the ad?
Well, that's not given.
So you just have to make a decision. So either way.
Yeah. I think he's bored and there is no sex, so he just...
Or maybe he was looking and he saw that it was her and he said, oh my
God.
Could be. Whatever, but either way, just know what that choice is. It doesn't matter what they know or what, even what the script, what you know. That's all that matters. So it's specific to what? See, it's lead to this. So you think you've just had like the most cataclysmic, you know, best sex ever, unique and blah, blah. She goes, to what? So the first, you have a dot, 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 like
this.
What's happening right here? Like, this is incredible. Like, and so you're already like this, like we're in love, right? Have you ever been to Hawaii? Oh man, I got this beautiful place. And, you know, it's like your eyes set the plans up. So then she's like, this is the last time we'll see each other, right? So his line is what? Now, for something like that, the last time we see, that's such a big fucking thing to hear. A lot of actors are going to be like, what? Or like, don't worry about taking a beat. In general, don't take beats.
Okay.
Just, that's like, what? Like, what? Why? What? Last time we see each other, what? However, if you're going to take a beat, like, put, like, what? What? Last time we see each other, what? Why? Like it's reflexive. You're not going to go, last time we see each other, beat, what? No, it's not that, right?
It should come immediately. Right away.
Right away. What? Harry, you're married. I thought it was like, help a marriage. Then it's like, that's who gives it. Who, it's okay. I'll get a divorce. Like, and to that to you is like, that's what we're doing here. We're starting our love affair.
Yeah.
So I'm going to end it. Like, it's
done. It's over.
It's not even like the big, like, you know what? I'll get a divorce. It's not that. It's like, it's okay. Like, we're in
he's
love.
He's pretty
so
chill, and there is no dot dot dot. And yeah, he's like pretty okay. Like I'll get a divorce. Like on the flick
it's
drop
not an
of
exclamation
a hat.
Points, a period. It's okay. I'll get a divorce. I think you're giddy, and he is giddy. He's like, it's okay. I'll get a divorce. We're fucking. We're right. I have a boyfriend. Okay, yeah, your boyfriend. He's basically probably her pimp or something, right?
No, he's just like another loser. So.
So there's some things about him that
he dominates her.
So he seems a great guy because he's a fucking loser. He's mean to her or what?
Yeah, he's like, you know, when she was going through a bad phase, so he took her in, gave her shelter.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, basically, and then she started earning the regular money from her job, and he kind of slipped off the cracks.
So you know this guy's like, he's a great guy. But you think he's like, why would you care about this guy? You don't love, you know she doesn't love him.
Yeah.
She's obviously revealed things to you about him.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, it seems like a great guy. So it's like, yeah, like, okay, my wife is, doesn't matter, your guy doesn't matter, whatever. And then he goes, oh, Greg, oh, yeah, name them. Now, of course, her next line is his dick. You don't want me to name them. He's got a 10-inch dick. She doesn't want you to, because it's basically like he fucks my living daylights out of me. Okay, whatever. You don't want me to name them. So she's referring to the fact that he's got a big dick.
Okay.
And beyond that, I'm a dominatrix. So again, it's like, so if we're in love, what difference does it make? I don't care what you do. You would. And then it's like, because you probably would. Well, you're rich. You're a dominatrix. But you said you'd quit. I'd pay for us. Why would you have a house? Like,
and the interesting thing is, like, right before the scene, he tells her, like, I'm going to offer you $20,000 to sleep with me. So basically, he tries to lead everything with money.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why he says, like, hey, I have a lot of money. So, like, you know, just leave your job and, you know, you can just be.
And that's a weird thing. Imagine, she's basically a prostitute, right?
Yeah, that's what she says. Like, I'm not a prostitute.
It's a prostitute.
Yeah.
He has ads in the back of the Village where she's a prostitute. But whatever. I'm a fucking. Okay, you're a prostitute. Anyway. Quit. I won't quit. Like, then it's like, I won't quit. She says, she didn't say, I'm not going to quit yet. Or I'll never. She goes, I won't quit. Like, wait, what are you talking about? I'm telling you, I'll fucking give you money, blah, blah, blah. Why? Were you like. This is a tough one because you go, why? Why? So. Each question is a question, right? It's not like, why? Why is it? It's like, why? Like, wait for an answer. Why?
Take a pause a little, like...
Wait, like, you're acting with her. Like, why? She's not answering. Were you so into it?
And were you, like, abused?
And then, like, she's not answering, like, were you, like, abused? So that's a little different tactic, right?
Like abuse.
Why? Were you so into it?
I bring my tone down a bit. Like abuse.
Again, what are you playing? Don't worry about your tone.
Okay.
What are you trying to get? You're trying to get something from her. So what are you trying to get from her? You're trying to get her. You're trying to get her ultimately to agree that that's not what she wants.
Correct.
That she wants to quit.
Yeah.
Why? What?
I'm just trying to get answers right now. Like, what's the deal?
Can we get you into therapy so you can. Get past this and give it up?
Yeah.
Do we have to deal with your abuse in order for us to have a great life together?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what pretty much is pretense.
Right?
Yeah.
Were you abused? Was that it? And you know, obviously you're in love with her, so it's not gonna be like, were you like abused? You're not gonna be mean. You're gonna be like, were you like abused? Like, can we? Because maybe in your head she'd be like, I was abused. We'll get you therapy. We can work through it. Like, in your head, it's working through to get your relationship together, right? Okay. Then she goes, were you? Right back, right? She's offensive, obviously. And so you talk about the fact that you were just kind of beaten.
Like, the next couple of lines are kind of a bit off. Like, cards flying across my head. A card table across my head, snot running down my face. Like, how shall I approach this? Like the chemistry teacher and all that.
I mean, I would just, you know, something like this. This is a tough. This is obviously the bulk of the scene, right? This monologue right here. So find what this is. One of those as if things. Like, what do you when you look at your childhood? Where are the moments where you were abused?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are like, I wasn't abused as a kid. Everyone was abused as a kid. Somewhere at some point, someone was abused.
Yep.
Either sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally. Somehow, some of you were abused. Whether you're, it was because your mom was drunk or your dad was cold or something, you were just like... So just think about the ways, like, where you, you know, she goes, were you? And then you're like, I can handle this. Well, no, I mean, I wasn't, not physically, like, I wasn't raped, but like, you, wherever you lived as a child was incredibly stressful for some reason.
Okay.
Maybe because your parents were drunk, or maybe because it was just a stressful thing. Nonstop screaming, everyone else silent, just watching him scream. So your dad, right?
Chemistry teacher.
Oh, your chemistry teacher. Hold on. He was...
Or is he talking about his dad?
He's talking about his dad.
Chemistry teacher.
I think he's talking about his dad.
Yeah, okay. Now it makes sense.
But like, the rage was pretty constant. He was a he wasn't my chemistry. He was a chemistry teacher. Like, so
he's talking about his dad.
So your dad is someone who, you know, here you are branching out into, like, you going into acting, branching out from this mundane everyday thing into like, I'm going to be in LA, live in a fucking Airbnb and act and do this fucking shit and go against it. Here's a man who's just like a, probably like a high school chemistry teacher, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a professor. Let me put it this way. Nobody wants to be a chemistry teacher. If you are a chemist, you're working for a whatever, a pharmaceutical
DuPont
company,
or
DuPont or something, Dow, wherever the fuck it is. You're not a chemistry teacher. So it's basically like being like an acting teacher in a high school. Now, being an acting teacher in LA, maybe there's a whole different whole thing to it, but being an acting teacher in high school, like, people do it. It's not where you want to land. You're there because something happened or didn't happen. But even more so with chemistry teacher, because chemistry teacher, that is something, if you had the brains and the ability, you could just get a job with a degree in chemistry somewhere, some fucking plant. But instead, you're a chemistry teacher.
Yeah.
So obviously he wasn't a happy chemistry teacher.
Right.
He was a high school... My high school chemistry teacher was fucking miserable. I think chemistry teachers in general are just the most miserable. Like, physics teacher, they have something like ethereal in their brain. But chemistry teachers, like...
Just like...
Like, you could have been an actual scientist. You could have worked for a fucking CDC or WHO, but you're a high school chemistry teacher.
So this is more of a vulnerable... I'm coming out as a vulnerable, so I should...
Again, what? Why are you saying... You're saying this because you asked her about abuse. She got defensive. Were you abused? And she's like...
Were you?
We're in love. So, like, we're sharing. Like, I'm gonna tell her, like, it's okay. Yeah. You know, not physically, but I had, this is the first woman you can talk to.
Okay.
She put a purple, veiny dildo up your ass, and it's opened up your mind. I can tell you, like, you're my best friend now. Like, yeah, you know, it's funny. I haven't talked about this before. Like, this is the first time you've talked about this to anybody. You haven't told your wife this shit. I just remember, like... Because it's like disjoint, like there's snot running everywhere. It was just stressed about money. And so on top of it, he was a high school chemistry who stressed out about money, and you had brothers and sisters, right? That's not a lot of money as a high school chemistry teacher. You make garbage money. And how many siblings did you have? Right? So he's so imagine that, nonstop screaming. Nonstop screaming. Nonstop screaming. That's like a baby. That's it's not just like a lot of screaming. He says nonstop screaming. That guy, every time he came home, he screamed at you kids or your poor mom. Everyone else silent, just watching him scream. So you weren't even watching TV. You were sitting there like cowed, watching him screaming at your mom or screaming at you. He sucked all the rage out of the room. Now, what does that line mean? He just sucked all the rage out of the room. It meant that his energy was so toxic and big that you weren't even afforded the ability to have your own rage. He took all the rage. So you just had to, like, sit there and watch, because every feeling that you had, he just was a vampire. He was an emotional vampire. He sucked all... That line is a great line. He just sucked all the rage out of the room.
Out of the room.
You couldn't fight him. It was just like you were mortified into this weird submission. There was none left for anyone else. Yeah, exactly. There was none left for anyone else. And then he died. You're young, so he died young. Because he probably had a fucking heart attack. Because he's a garbage fucking human. And you probably never had closure with him. You never...
Yeah, that's why it makes sense, because I was wondering, like, why would you look at your chemistry teacher's ashes? So, like, now it makes sense that it was his dad. And
in other words, I don't know, maybe you're the oldest brother. You're the one with his ashes. Think about that, too.
Yeah.
Because he says, no one else, right? For anyone else. That's obviously not just you and the mom. You have brothers and sisters. They probably hate him.
Yeah.
Maybe you're the oldest son.
Yeah.
So you were the executor of the will, and you're giving the urn of ashes. And you haven't spread them anywhere. You have them sitting on a mantle in your fucking home. It doesn't say sometimes I look at his urn. He looks at his ashes. So sometimes if you're really dark bums, you open that fucking urn and you look inside at the ashes. And you imagine those ashes being parts of him yelling. Now, imagine what that is saying. Imagine how, again, you've never told this to anybody. You're telling people that your abusive, horrific dad, who never beat you, but put you in a life of fear and submission, which is probably why you like being abused now by this woman, ultimately. Yeah. Because there's something about you get to like relive this trauma in this safe way, right? That's what a lot of this stuff is about. That he's a cover, that you get to tell this story for the first time. And we tell a story for the first time, although it's for her, because you want to get something from her from it. As you're saying it, like, you can get a little lost and really think about the idea of whether you're home drunk, like opening up by yourself, you open up an urn and you look at ashes and you have his screaming voice and you hear them yelling. Just think about what that means to your psyche. And then you kind of take a, I mean, you'd mean that we're not going to see each other, right? So there's, you can give yourself a moment of like getting a little bit lost in that description, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
About your dad.
Yep. Right? I think so. This is a very emotional moment for,
and again, for again, Harry. It doesn't have to be emotional, right? Because you're just saying what happened.
Yeah.
There's actors who can say this without like a sociopath, without an ounce of emotion, and it'll make you cry. It doesn't matter what it does to you. What is it going to do to the people listening?
Listening to me.
And what will make, what will affect them is if you really think about moments in your life, if you are able, either you use your imagination and you draw this out and you really imagine it, or think about moments in your life where you were abused that are similar to this.
Right.
Or you think about, like, if your dad died and what would his ashes say to you? I'm disappointed. I love you. What would they say? You know, what's the idea of looking at your dad's ashes? What would that?
Maybe he said he wanted to keep them around because he said he proved it, because I remember somewhere he's saying that, you know, I sold my company, I showed him the $3 million check.
Yeah.
And he, instead of him saying, you know, I'm proud of you, he was like pretty much, you know.
Good, finally, or something, yeah.
No, he was just like pretty, like very rejectful of that.
Or maybe he died before, I don't know.
No, in the play it says
interesting.
He showed his father had cancer, so he showed him the check of $3 million, and he was like, you know, whatever. Like, he was not proud of it.
Interesting.
So Harry was looking for some kind of
closure, acknowledgement.
Acknowledgement
is more important than gold. So,
right.
So I would say like that. Okay, look, I think we can leave it there. That's so right away already. There's a couple choices in there that you notice that, like, oh, this means this, you know, that hard to get when you read by yourself. You don't have. So you'd pay an audition coach that. They'd charge you $300. It's fucking retarded. And just so, oh, it's coconut soap. Oh, it's actually his dad. Seriously, that's what it is when you pay these stupid coaches.
So they just, like, go through this exercise pretty much. And
well, I was just kind of doing that with you. Everyone works their own way.
Okay.
Some audition coaches just direct you. Say, do this, hold a pen here, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes people go, what is it that you're saying? I mean, I'm from an old school Stanislavski acting method, which is like, what are you doing and what are you saying? And involve, it's not like, so you say, my tone should be this, or I should feel it. Don't worry about that. What are you trying to impart to the other person? And in imparting that to the other person, what are you trying to get from them? For her, what you're trying to get her. You're trying to get a it's all about connection.
Connection.
Right? So, you're trying to get love. I remember my acting teacher, Ron Van Loo, legendary. He's now head of Yale, but he would. Someone would always be like, what does my character want? Just unconditional love. That's all. just one thing. Just unconditional love. That's it. And that's kind of what it is. Like, you're looking for, like, imagine if you've lived this life of quiet desperation and there's someone who comes along and opens your idea to the possibility of, like, a life partner and unconditional love. Like, holy, what have I been doing? I could have been with this person. I mean, it's retarded, but we're human beings, and that's what we feel.
Yeah.
And then cut to a year later, like, babe, peanut butter goes on the second shelf. Why do you always put it on the wrong shelf? But the first flush of mad infatuation, it's there's nothing like it.
Nothing like it.
Yeah.
You're right.
So that's what this is about. It's about, you know, being opened up sexually and really thinking that you're in love, because your dopamine is through the fucking roof. Because of this.
So this helps a lot. So I wanted to discuss like this with my scene partner, but she does not engage in that. Like, tell us what's happening. And
She doesn't need to. You can do the work on your own.
Okay.
And hopefully your teacher is good enough to work with you guys and get you there. But I would just, you know, I would just, every line, think about what you're saying and why you're saying it and what you're saying to her. I mean, there's a lot to be, like, you look at someone like Tom Cruise, people are like, he isn't a great actor. Tom Cruise is a fucking great actor. And you know why? He's a Scientologist, and they're very clear about everything they fucking say, which is why so many Scientologists got into acting, because every word, you have to know exactly what the fuck you're saying, or don't say it.
Okay.
It's part of the principles of Scientology. I'm not a Scientologist, don't get me wrong.
Okay.
But I know enough to know that, like, you can't say something without exactly know what it is you're saying and why you're saying it and what effect you're trying to get.
Okay.
So don't worry about what you're feeling. Not physically. He was just miserable chemistry. He was just stressed and screaming. It's funny, like, sometimes I look at his ashes, I just picture his ashes just screaming at me. Anyway, so what do you, how much do I owe? Whatever, you know.
Yeah, then he takes up money.
If the emotion comes because the idea of thinking about it gets you there, great. But it's the death of fucking art when people try to make it happen. Just say what you're trying to say.
Okay.
All right. That was a long podcast, but I'm glad you did that. That was fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
And are you on social medias?
Yes.
Where are you on social media? Where can people find you?
So my Instagram handle is IAM. Rovex.
I am Rovex?
Yes. So that was my DJ name my friend gave me.
Yeah, I love it.
Like, he calls me like Robbie Rovex.
I love it.
So Robbie Rovex. I said, all right, bro. Like, he taught me how to DJ. He's a pretty cool guy. So yeah. I respect him a lot. So I'm like just carrying that.
Love it. Yeah. All right, man. Thanks. All right.
Thank you.